this morning is the Advertising Federation against Chicago. Mr. Levy.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Paul Levy, and I represent the Federation of Advertising Industry Representatives. Since October 1997, the Federation has been litigating an ordinance which sought to ban outdoor advertising of alcohol and tobacco throughout the city of Chicago. During the course of the litigation, the ordinance has been amended on two occasions in an effort to meet constitutional requirements. Under the weight of the judicial record, under the pendency of a motion for summary judgment, and as a consequence of the decision in Lorillard versus Riley, the city sought to repeal that ordinance. On motion, the ordinance was found to be moot and the case dismissed. That circumstance gives rise to two issues, the first of which is whether or not the ordinance was in fact moot, the case in controversy moot, at the time that it was dismissed, and secondarily, and of equal import, whether or not Federation can be found to be the prevailing party pursuant to Buchanan as a consequence of its having obtained the requisite judicial imprimatur required by Buchanan. The repeal of an ordinance alone does not equate to mootness. It must be absolutely clear the wrongful behavior will not reoccur. The burden is on the defendant, and it is a heavy one and a stringent test.
Has the Supreme Court ever held a case live after a statute or ordinance had been repealed?
Yes, sir. In Northwest Florida versus Jacksonville, that is precisely what happened, Your Honor. The fact of the matter is that the bare repeal of an ordinance does not give the assurance that the unlawful conduct will not reoccur. That assurance is a heavy burden and a stringent test. Here, the bare repeal, with no such assurance, is insufficient to meet the requirements of mootness. Indeed, in a case in the district court, Wygand versus Tinley Park, the court was confronted with precisely the circumstance that this court is confronted with regard to mootness. There, an ordinance regarded the ban on the playing of games in Tinley Park. No assurance was given as to future violations, and no official statement was made that the ordinance will not be reinstated. A preliminary injunction was granted, after which the ordinance was appealed. When permanent injunction hearing came forth, the city argued that the matter had been moot, and the district court ruled that mootness did not occur and granted the permanent injunction. In granting the permanent injunction, the court said, in deference to a host of Supreme Court precedent, finally and most significantly, the defendants refuse to offer any assurance against future violations. They do not make an official statement that the ordinance or something like it will not be reinstated. They have not said as much to the plaintiffs. They do not offer it to me, either at the hearing or in their written submission to the court, or in any statement or in any assurance.
What kind of assurance would be needed? For instance, would it require a resolution from the legislative body?
I think
just an assertion from, let's say, the mayor or the city attorney.
I think the kind of reassurance is that a similar ordinance would not be passed.
By whom?
How does the government give that assurance?
By resolution. It may
what
be.
What is the value of that? Any legislature can legislate any time it wants.
Indeed, it can. But no legislature can legislate in disregard for the Constitution. The legislative record in this particular case is such that throughout the legislation...
I don't understand. A substantive violation of the Constitution is, of course, a problem. But you seem to be suggesting that the city council could pass an ordinance saying, we'll never again try to ban outdoor liquor ads. And then, if their successors in office pass such an ordinance, you could, say, ask that ordinance to be set aside on the ground that it violates the earlier ordinance?
No, Your Honor, I'm suggesting that the city council or the corporation council or the mayor could render assurances that constitutional requirements will be adhered to, met, and respected. Heretofore, they have been disregarded.
That's to achieve mootness, right?
Yes, sir. So as to assure that the disregard of the constitutional requirements that have occurred in the past will not occur in the future. And a look at the record in this case makes clear that there is no respect for nor regard for the constitutional requirements. When this ordinance was originally passed, the chairman of the Committee on Buildings, Alderman Bernard Stone, testified that he gave no regard whatsoever to the requirements of the test of Central Hudson versus Public Service. The co-sponsors of the ordinance said that they gave no consideration to alternatives that may exist with regard to the restriction of the plaintiff's constitutional prerogatives. Indeed, Alderman Peterson said, alternatives are of no consequence to me. Every little bit helps. This is in complete disregard for Central Hudson, the cases that followed 44 Liquor Mart, Coors, Edenfeld versus Fain, and certainly now in Lorillard versus Riley. Indeed, as we stand here today, Lorillard versus Riley, which is directly on point and constitutionally determinative of the matter in this case, is not a case for which the city exhibits any particular regard. The city argues that it is just another case. The city says that it has examined its ordinance in light of the opinion, and while not conceding the ordinance's invalidity, made the decision not to risk the possible consequences of keeping the ordinance. One must ask, what are the possible risks of keeping this ordinance after 4.5 years of vigorous litigation, after all the cost, all the expense, the preparation for trial, a grant of summary judgment by the district court, a partial affirmance by this court, and a cert petition to the Supreme Court, which was denied. But during Lorillard versus Riley, in which the city participated as amicus, for the reason that it stated in its brief that it sought to influence the outcome of this case, it put forth the decision of this circuit with regard to the location-content dichotomy that this circuit and the Second Circuit adhered to. The Supreme Court in Lorillard directly cited and rejected that decision, reversed it both on preemption grounds and on constitutional grounds, and sent it back for further hearing. Based on a summary judgment then pending, the plaintiff supplemented its motion for summary judgment, and in open court, the city conceded that Lorillard determined the issue. The court instructed the city to file a response to the motion for summary judgment, but the city did not do so. Instead, the city filed a motion to dismiss for mootness, albeit the fact that the ordinance had not yet been repealed. The district court then waited 5 weeks for the repeal to occur before it was in fact dismissed as moot. I must say that the city will argue in due course that repeal of an ordinance moots a case. The fact of the matter is that that is not a separate rule. That is a subset of the rule that it must be absolutely clear that the wrongful behavior will not reoccur and that the burden is on the defendant to establish that fact. The cases to be cited by the city are cases in which ordinances have been repealed, but they have been narrowed and in scope and replaced with ordinances that are constitutionally specific and adhere to constitutional prerogatives.
Let me come back to the question that I don't see how, in your view, any government could ever give absolute assurance that the problematic ordinance or statute or whatever will not be readopted. I think legislators can enact what they please.
I disagree with Your Honor respectfully. Legislatures can enact constitutional laws. And in this case, this legislature has shown a disrespect and contempt for Central Hudson and every step of the way. That is the restriction on legislatures, and that is the restriction...
The alternative way to put it is that the jurisdiction has shown an interest in pressing to the limits of its constitutional authority and wishes to test what they are.
Well, I would submit to Your Honor...
I'd hate to hear you in 1936 describing the behavior of the Roosevelt administration.
Well, that's not my chore this morning, Your Honor, but my chore is heavy enough. The fact of the matter is that the city and its spokesmen have said throughout that Central Hudson is not a test that it adheres to. Central Hudson is the manner in which constitutional freedom of speech for commercial purposes can be restricted, and the city has shown no deference to that whatsoever. The city has shown no deference to Lorillard. The city has said that Lorillard is simply another case. But Lorillard was more liberal than the issue before this court.
The whole issue here is mootness, is it not, that that you're not the you, with all the work that you've done and whatever you've achieved, you won't get attorney's fees if this case is moot.
Your Honor, that's a piece of it.
That has to be a lot more than a piece of it.
No, it is a piece of it, Your Honor. It is our view that in light of the fact that the city has already established that it has no regard for Central Hudson and that Lorillard versus Riley is simply another case, it needs a decision by this circuit, by this court, that will serve as a guidepost for its future conduct with regard to its efforts to restrict constitutional
speech. The Supreme Court of the United States has done that.
I have indeed, Your Honor, and the city
said... But you want the Seventh Circuit to issue an opinion saying, we boldly agree with the Supreme Court of the United States.
It would appear that that's what the city needs because it does not seem to respect that opinion.
I don't see why anybody who, in your view, pays no attention to the Constitution of the United States and the Supreme Court of the United States would suddenly bow down when three judges of the Seventh Circuit said, oh, and we agree.
Well, perhaps that's correct, Your Honor, and one would like to think that Lorillard versus Riley would control. And if it does, then what is left is attorney's fees.
Well, but it seems to me if a city has to pay, let's say, $750,000 in attorney's fees, chances are a lot better they're not going to reenact that law.
One would hope, Your Honor.
As opposed to being able to declare it moot and walk away without having to pay the attorney's fees.
Well, that's what Buchanan...
It seems to be why we're here.
That's what Buchanan addresses, Your Honor, and I would like to turn to Buchanan as we speak. The policy and doctrine of Buchanan is as follows. We cannot agree that the term prevailing party authorizes federal courts to award attorney's fees to a plaintiff who, by simply filing a non-frivolous but potentially meritless lawsuit, it will never be determined, has reached the sought-after destination without obtaining any judicial relief. It defines judicial relief in three ways. A consent decree is sufficient, nominal damages is sufficient, and any judicial action which alters the judicial relationship of the parties. The consequence of... I see that my white light is on. But I will move forward. As a consequence, the issues become whether the Federation simply filed a frivolous but potentially meritless lawsuit. Clearly, that has not happened. The positions maintained by Federation have been adopted both as to preemption and as to constitutionality in Lorillard versus Riley. Is there a determination of the question? Absolutely, in Lorillard versus Riley.
You've got 1 minute left.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. I have 1 minute left. I just want you to know that.
I'd best quit. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate your help.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Levy. Ms. Luce.
Good morning. May it please the Court. The Federation of Advertising Industry Representatives filed this lawsuit several years ago to challenge an ordinance that banned most cigarette and alcohol advertising on billboards in the city. And in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision in Lorillard, the city repealed the ordinance. The district court issued its judgment dismissing the case as moot. That judgment is correct, and because the case is moot, Federation is not a prevailing party entitled to attorney's fees under clear Supreme Court precedent. First, on the mootness question, there is no remaining live case or controversy here. The general rule is that repeal moots a case based on repeal legislation absent affirmative evidence that the challenged conduct is likely to recur. And this is consistent with the case that counsel cited this morning, the Northeastern Florida contractors case. In that case, there was recurrence, that it was actual recurrence there, the Supreme Court found, because there was an amendment to the challenged legislation that the court deemed did not differ that much from the original legislation. There's no such evidence here. There's nothing to indicate that the challenged conduct at issue can reasonably be expected to recur.
Has there been any legislative action or committee consideration concerning a revised ordinance banning or dealing with cigarette or liquor advertising and billboards?
Directed towards cigarette and alcohol advertising in particular, none that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Opposing counsel has referred to one ordinance that is sitting in committee relating to a different sign restriction, but there's no evidence that anything has been proposed relating to any type of sign restriction targeting cigarette and alcohol advertising similar to the one that was challenged here. That has been repealed, and there's nothing pending to reenact something substantially similar to that ordinance.
Has there been any affirmative effort, some resolution or something, acknowledging the whatever you want to call it, error, and saying this is not going to happen again?
Beyond the actual repeal itself?
Mm-hmm.
No, there's been nothing of that sort. However, I'm not aware of any case that says, in addition to repeal, that the government entity needs to must also admit the absolute invalidity as a matter of legislative record.
Is there any legislative history with regard to the repeal?
I'm not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. It was easily passed.
Was there any debate or discussion?
City Council basically acted on the advice of Corporation Council in repealing this after Lorillard. I'm not aware of any debate around that. In fact,
was the advice memorialized, written advice from the Corporation Council's office to the City Council?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. However, it's clear from the timing of this case, and we've never made any bones about it. This ordinance was repealed in light of Lorillard, and we have acknowledge that Lorillard certainly casts serious doubt on the validity of the former ordinance. And I don't know of any case that suggests that when a legislative body takes the affirmative measure of passing legislation to repeal, that anything in addition is required. That is typically sufficient to indicate that the offending conduct is not reasonably likely to recur.
You know, that sounds kind of logical, but what about this footnote in Aladdin's Castle that says that, among other things, the test for mootness in cases such as this is a stringent one. Mere voluntary cessation of allegedly illegal conduct does not moot a case. If it did, the courts would be compelled to leave the defendant free to turn to its old ways. And then it goes on, the case might be moot if subsequent events made it absolutely clear that the alleged or wrongful behavior could not reasonably be expected to recur. And then that was reignited a number of years later in an opinion by Justice Thomas.
The Supreme Court's case in Aladdin's Castle has been read by this court and every other circuit to it acknowledges that a repeal does not always necessarily moot a case. And in that case, there was a statement that the city intended to reenact the challenge legislation if it were not under injunction that prohibited it. And subsequent cases have read Aladdin's Castle to embrace the rule, and certainly not overrule the well-established overrule the well-established rule that repeal typically does moot a challenge to a prior ordinance. But there are some cases where there may be evidence that reenactment is likely. And in that case, there was an explicit statement by the someone representing the legislative body that that the city did intend to reenact the challenge provision. There's no such evidence in this case. We have said we never intend to enforce this ordinance. The ordinance has been repealed, and there's nothing to indicate that the challenge conduct can be reasonably expected to recur. Furthermore, there's no viable damages claim remaining. Federation does not have standing to seek damages on behalf of its members because their participation would be required to calculate those damages. And in fact, Federation has never even attempted to argue that it does in fact have standing. Federation attempts to dodge the question by saying that we have forfeited the argument, but in fact, we did raise this below in a motion to dismiss as well as in our answer to their complaint. There's no basis for concluding that we forfeited the argument.
It seems to me that this whole issue, and I said it on the other side, comes down to attorney's fees. The city, once the, Lorillard, Lorillard came down, that the city said, saw the writing on the wall and said, it's the end of this, and facing what the city might have thought was a sure summary judgment and attorney's fees, went about and repealed the case and even warned the judge, we're going to repeal this. The judge held off, and then it was repealed after 4.5 years. And so they've run up a lot of attorney's fees. It seems to me that's what this whole thing comes down to. Can you intercept a sure or pretty sure attorney's fees liability by simply repealing the ordinance at the brink of summary judgment?
Well, I think that Buchanan actually answers this. I mean, what the city did here was when Lorillard came down, we evaluated our ordinance, and in a sense, yes, we decided to give it up because Lorillard made it a more difficult battle, and we repealed, and Buchanan squarely addresses this issue. And in fact, there is a policy interest to be served by this, too. It encourages governmental entities to evaluate their legislation and take the measures that are appropriate that they believe the law requires, or at least to evaluate the likelihood that the law requires certain activity, and to take the measures appropriate without the threat of attorneys, without feeling forced to continue with the ordinance because of the threat of attorney's fees. As I said, under Buchanan, since the underlying case is moot, so too is their claim for attorney's fees. In short, the case is over, and Federation is simply not a prevailing party. Lorillard does not make Federation a winner here, even if it were clear that Lorillard required the repeal. Where is Federation's victory? Federation would have this court adopt the rule that it is prevailing party if some other party is successful in compelling the same relief in some other litigation. And at least two other circuits have soundly rejected this approach, the 8th in Peter versus Jax and the 9th in Gehring versus Brophy, soundly reasoning that if some other case compels appeal, that's not a victory attributable to a plaintiff in another case. Nor can Federation be deemed a prevailing party by virtue of this court's partial affirmance in the first appeal. That affirmance compelled elimination of an exception to the general rule under the former ordinance, which was not relief that Federation sought, nor did it benefit Federation's members. Federation claims to have achieved some kind of moral victory from the first appeal, but this court in Katie versus City of Chicago squarely held that that is not enough when it was not relief that the plaintiff sought or was of any benefit to the plaintiff. And finally, Federation is not a prevailing party by virtue of Judge Shader's earlier summary judgment. Of course, that judgment was reversed, and it pertained only to Federation's former preemption claims that are not a part of this case any longer. because they were abandoned, not as a result of what happened in this case, but as the decision on Federation's members to no longer accept cigarette advertisements.
Well, their argument is that your track record, the city of Chicago's track record, is such that we have no reason to believe that you won't enact another ordinance similar to it and equally violative of the Constitution.
Well, I believe what our track record shows is that we did want to preserve our ordinance, but to preserve it in compliance with the law. And that's what actually our reaction to Supreme Court precedent in the past, specifically the Greater New Orleans case, shows. Yes, we wanted to defend our ordinance, but yes, when a case came down that cast doubt on that, we retreated. And there's no reason to believe that we're lying or somehow being just waiting for this case to go away to spring this ordinance back to life. I think this case is pretty similar to this court's decision in Thomas versus Filer in that regard. I think that our history shows responsible legislative conduct here. In short, the square holding of Buchanan is that a plaintiff is not a prevailing party where they have not secured a judgment on the merits or court-ordered consent decree before the case is rendered moot by a voluntary change in conduct. Federation has no judgment or consent decree in its favor. Thus, the district court correctly determined that Federation is not a prevailing party entitled to attorney's fees. For these reasons, as well as those set out in our brief, we ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Anything further, Mr. Levy?
Yes,
two or three very quick points. The first of which is that Buchanan deals directly with the issue before this court. So to soften the impact of this rejection of the catalyst theory, the Supreme Court relied on two safety nets, and I quote from Buchanan, "The petitioner's fear of mischievous defendants only materializes in claims for equitable relief, for so long as the plaintiff has a cause of action for damages, as we do, a defendant's change in conduct will not moot the case. Even then," said Judge Rehnquist, "it is not now clear how often courts will find a case mooted. It is well settled that a defendant's voluntary cessation of a challenged practice does not deprive a federal court of its power to determine the legality of the practice unless it is absolutely clear that the alleged wrongful behavior could not reasonably be expected to recur. It is absolutely clear that that wrongful behavior continues. There is before this court as part of a record a vague, ambiguous, standardless ordinance that would hold outdoor advertising illegal if it violates aesthetic standards or if it provides visual clutter. That kind of ordinance, counsel." Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement.